The day after I came back to the meeting, still high, and I said I got 17 days. And the day before I said 27. And I thought that I'm fooling everyone. It was the same people. I just couldn't remember how many days I had yesterday. You know, the days that I made up.
That is the voice of Netta M. She's 26 years old. She's sober since May 1st, 2021. My name is Mike S. And this is another episode of Keep Coming Back, Real Stories of Sobriety and Recovery. So I've gotten a bunch of messages asking for an interview with someone who was more in the middle of their first year of recovery, not someone with like a ton of time. And so when I got those, I thought of my friend Netta. And before I get to the interview, I thought it would be fun just to tell the story of how me and her met. So basically last October, I was in New York City. It was the fall. I was sitting on a bench in Washington Square Park, which is a place downtown in New York City, very busy, very close to NYU, a lot of activity. And yeah, I'm just sitting on this bench waiting for a friend, and this beautiful woman sits down on the bench next to me. She was Israeli, and we started talking, and eventually we exchanged information. And about a week later, we went to dinner. Now, when it comes to my dating life, while I don't avoid the subject of sobriety, I do try to play it down if possible, by either saying I don't drink because I'm like training for something, or I just say I don't drink. I try not to get into the details of everything simply because on a first date, it can feel a little heavy in my experience to talk about that stuff. And it sometimes becomes the focal point of the date. And I remember my sponsor once telling me, you know, don't let your sobriety be the most interesting part about you. And so I try not to do that. But Netta, who was on her second martini at this point in the dinner, was very curious as to why I was drinking club sodas or some mocktail, whatever I was having. And so the conversation made its way towards sobriety, and it did throughout the rest of the evening. So long story short, there was no second date, but months later, I got a text from her. It was a picture, and it was a picture of her 30-day coin. And she said that our conversation, in a small way, sparked her to go into the rooms of AA. And we've been friends ever since. And, you know, her story involves a few setbacks and a relapse. And we talk about the ups and downs of her first year being sober. And so with that, let's get to my interview with Netta M.
And a year ago was the time that I realized, I got a problem. And a year ago, if someone would have told me that I would be sober today, I would just laugh and run away.
So what happened a year ago? Was there, like, for me, I had several stop signs along the way that said stop drinking. There was a lot, many. So in the end, it was just, I was just depressed and I looked in the mirror and I didn't like it. So that was really it. So what was it for you?
So for years I was drinking and drugging. Even while I was in a relationship, I used to drink all day, and I used to take a lot of anti-anxiety pills, Xanax, mm-hmm. painkillers, Percocet, morphine. I was like, my drug of choice is everything I can put my hand on.
Me too.
Basically, that wasn't my rock bottom. Because I was still in a relationship, I still had my job, I was still living with my partner in a nice apartment, I was kind of healthy, and I didn't realize how depressed I was. Only with time, my marriage fell apart, I left the apartment, I got fired, and I started partying a lot. And I was never like the party person. But last summer, I just started partying like crazy. I was like freshly single and, okay, I'm done with the alcohol. I don't need alcohol anymore if I can do ketamine. Because right. If I don't drink and I just do ketamine, I don't have the hangover.
No hangover, yeah.
So I found this recipe of how to not get a hangover and just keep going and keep going. And if I do one bump of ketamine and one bump of cocaine, I feel good and I can stay there all night, but still, balance is the key. One downer, one upper, mm-hmm. and then I'm fine. I'm balanced, you know?
Right, right, right.
And of course, this like no drinking phase lasted for like a week. I was like, I'm not gonna drink. I'm just going to do ketamine. It's pharmaceutical. It's medicine, you know? It's good for me. And back then I had a therapist and I've been subscribed for antidepressant. And I used to take it, but I used to tell my therapist, I don't feel anything. Like, I don't feel that the medicine works, you know? And he was like, Nada, are you still drinking every day? And I was like, yes. Are you still going out and drugging every night? And I was like, yes. So why are you still taking the antidepressant? It's not going to do anything for you. So I stopped taking it. And right. I kept, like, partying. And I left my therapist.
I give you credit for actually being honest with your therapist. My therapist said to me, he said, listen, this is only going to work if you go to AA. And so I then left because that was not an option. I didn't even know what AA was, but I said, that is not an option. I assumed that had something to do with me stopping taking drugs, and that was not an option.
I mean, when my therapist told me that I'm an alcoholic, I was like, you don't understand anything. Goodbye. And right. I just left him. And today,
think about how many stories you've heard like that in the rooms now of people in therapy and their therapist saying that. They must say it all the time.
And I thought,
and it must be the most frustrating, right? It must be the most frustrating thing to be a therapist and work with an alcoholic.
Because
you're just basically hitting your head against the wall until it gets over.
Imagine therapists looking at you. They know exactly what you have. Exactly. And they're like, you're an alcoholic. And you're literally leaving them. And they're like, oh, not like another one leaving me because of that. You know, I imagine right. that.
And also, if I was them, I'd be like, you're paying me. You're paying me and wasting your time to come here. Why? Just take the advice.
No, basically, every week we used to sit in the session. And I used to say the same thing over and over and over again.
What
it was like
it?
This loop of, oh, I'm too tired to speak right now
because
I'm too hangover. I went out last night. I regret 90% of the things I've done last night. So here it goes. And then I say all the, like, the list of the things. And he's like, oh, not again, you know? It's
right.
just like, it's a broken record.
Yeah. Wait, I want to go back, though, to something that you said before. So you said that you were growing up, you were a big loner, right? Because you're a pretty social person from what I know. The version of you that I know is pretty social. And the truth is, I think I'm pretty social, too, or people think that I am. But I also was a loner.
I think that I'm a good actress.
Right.
Because I am a loner. I'm still a loner. And I think I would be a loner for the rest of my life. But now I'm putting the effort, I'm making the effort to be more social. And when you've met me, I was still using.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this whole show of myself, confident, social. And basically, I was just a people pleaser. And I just went.
Is that what people pleasing is?
I mean, yes.
I hear people throw around that term. To me, what you're saying is that, like, I was projecting an image of someone I thought you might like. Not to me, to the world.
But isn't it being a people pleaser?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Now, I assume people pleaser means trying to make everyone happy. What you're doing and what I was doing is trying to make people like me.
But I also really, I really cared what other people think of me.
Yeah.
So I didn't want anyone to know my defects, and I didn't want anyone to know
what
that,
are the defects?
That I'm a loner, that I love to be alone, that I'm depressed, that I actually don't think that, I mean, back then, I didn't think that good things about other people. I basically hated everyone.
Mm.
I hated myself. I hated looking in the mirror. I hated myself when I wasn't high or drunk. And even when I was high and drunk, I didn't like myself. I was just convincing myself that on that way, I could like myself. And that's the only way for me to accept and to like myself.
So what leads up to walking into the meeting?
I knew about AA because the summer before that, I was highly fucked up. I lost my phone again at one of the parties, and I was hangover, withdrawing. I was walking down the street to the Apple store to find the Apple store.
Yeah.
So I went to this random, not very random, apparently, guy on the street. I approach him and I tell him, like, do you know where the Apple store is? And he says, I'm going there. Do you want to come with me in my car? Which is, like, absurd because, like, oh, okay. I'll go with you. Like a stranger on the street on your car. Yeah. And I did that. And he took my phone number. To make sure that everything is fine. And we met for a coffee after that. And I realized that he's sober.
Mm.
He told me he's sober. And I was like, fuck that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, well, yeah, I mean, I'm here if you need anything. And we started meeting up. Like, we just became friends. And I was still using and I was still drinking. But then at this moment that my best friend was in my apartment, I only thought about him. And I was like, he planted a seed that now I realize that he actually planted. And I called him and I told him, I have a problem and I need to get sober. And he just told me, go to a meeting. And I was like, I don't know anything about meetings. So I went online and I found this meeting here in
which one?
Midnight.
Okay.
It was very it was overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
It was a lot for me. I was still high and I didn't want to go. My best friend, she convinced me to go and she was with me on the phone all the way down there. And I was standing outside of the meeting and I was telling her over the phone, like, I'm not doing it. Like, they're all different than me. I see the people, like, I'm not part of it at all. I can't see myself sitting there. And she was like, hang up the phone, go to the meeting, sit there. You don't like it, don't go again. And I sat there and I was like, I think I was falling asleep. I was still, like, withdrawing and I don't know. And I left and I decided that I'm not going to drink again.
So what did you have in the meeting? Did you identify?
I identified. I lied about my clean time. I said that I got like 27 days.
Why?
Like this random number because I wanted to feel a part of it.
Yeah, but you would have felt more part of it with one day.
But, you know, I can't judge I can't judge this person that went to this meeting and lied about her clean time. I cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand. Now I laugh about it. Back then.
You know, I lied about my clean time in there. They asked me to qualify once and I was like, shit. I have to say yes. So I qualified having drank the night before.
Well, it makes sense to me, you know, because now, of course, I'm not going to do it. But back then, the day after I came back to the meeting, still high, and I said I got 17 days. And the day before, I said 27.
Right.
And I thought that I'm fooling everyone. It was the same people. I just couldn't remember how many days I had yesterday. You know, the days that I made up.
So give me, like, the early sobriety, right? The first 90 days. Right. Give me like the good things that you heard, the things like the best moments that you remember, the things that you remember the most.
The first month was really hard for me. I was going in and out, in and out, in and out. And
meaning like you drink and then
get
right.
I made it for like a few days and then I drank again. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days drank again, 12 days drank again.
And what is the mentality? It's like, I'll just quit tomorrow.
I'm just not an alcoholic.
Okay.
I just don't have a problem. I'm not the same as them. I'm not same as you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better and I'm fine and I don't have a problem. And I remember I had 12 days and I said, I can go to Miami. I can go out to a party and I don't have to drink because I don't have a problem. And I ended up in a party doing all the drugs in the world, coming back home at like 9 a.m. high, couldn't fall asleep, taking like 5 Xanax, not even thinking about the fact that if I take 5 Xanax after all the drugs I've done, I can actually die. Mm-hmm. And then I came back to the city and I said, I want to do it for real this time. So I got a sponsor and my sponsor told me something. What's the story you're telling yourself? Because you're not being an alcoholic and you don't have a problem and you can do it by yourself. What's the story you're telling yourself? And these are my stories. It's all stories I made up, mm-hmm. even though I knew the truth inside of me. So I took it really seriously. I got a sponsor, and instead of saying, oh, going to a meeting again, I'm so tired of it, instead of it, I started looking forward for this meeting. And I got excited for meetings. And I stopped telling myself stories.
The thing about it is, I think framing is so big. Like, which way am I going to frame this? Do I have to go or do I get to go is a classic example, right? And the thing is, it's like, it has to be realistic to me. I can't lie to myself. So it had to be, do I really look forward to this? And the truth was, I did. Like, I actually liked the meetings. I liked the stories. And when I finally was like you, I thought the same thing, like, I'm better than you. But at the same time, like, the funny thinking is, I think I'm better than you, but I'm afraid to share. And so I had to find some friends. So did you find friends?
So I found friends. And the fact is that I've met, now she's my best friend in the program, but when we met, we didn't like each other. We were so different. We went to the park, Washington Square Park. Mm-hmm. We drank coffee and we just like thought to ourselves, I can't wait for this to be over. We felt like it's a play date that someone hooked us up, and I can't wait for this to be over. And
like, you would go after the meeting together. Did she feel the same way looking back?
Yeah.
Have you guys talked about this?
Yeah. And then something happened. I mean, we are so different. I mean, Mike, you look at me. I'm like, I'm basic. I'm very basic. And she got a big personality. And you know what? The reason I said I'm basic is because I wanted to be like her. I wanted to have what she have. I wanted to not think about what other people think of me.
No, the interview is not over. The episode is not over. But around halfway through, there was a minor glitch in the audio. So I'm just going to quickly fill in the blank on what you missed. Netta got to 90 days. And then soon after, she relapsed literally inside a liquor store. And where the conversation picks up is discussing the relapse and then what happens afterwards. I just celebrated 5 years a couple weeks ago, right? And the thing about it is, it's always like a rolling hill for me. And the problem is when I work the steps, like the road's there, it's all paved for me. All I have to do is walk on it. And then when I do it, everything's great. And I don't, that little voice that has me do and that sparks all those defects, it stays nice and quiet. But then my life gets good. My program never accelerates when my life is getting good, which makes no sense, right? You think if it's working, do more. But I don't think like that. I've always like, it's good. My life gets big. My AA goes down. My life gets bad. My AA goes up.
I just felt like I got a sponsor. I walk the steps. I have friends. Everything is good. I got a job.
Yeah.
I am ready. I am ready for life and I don't need it anymore. I think for me it was the opposite. I thought that if everything goes so well, I just don't need a program anymore. I don't need to call my sponsor every day. I don't need to call my friends. They need to call me. I don't need to walk the steps right now because step number 3 is kind of not for me because I don't have an higher power and I don't believe in God. So I think I'm going to skip this step because maybe it's not for everyone.
Right. It's just a suggestion.
Yeah. I mean, okay, they suggest. Right. It doesn't mean that I have to do it. And then one stupid moment, I remember this moment like it was yesterday. And it's good that I remember it.
Okay, what happened?
I was at home.
Yeah, 4 months sober.
4 months yes. sober. Everything is good. Mm-hmm. Everything is going great. And I'm calling someone and he doesn't answer the phone. And I get kind of upset. I don't know why. It was like a weird day. You know, this one of these weird days that mm-hmm. you just like everything goes wrong. Then I call my best friend. She doesn't pick up the phone. And I call my sponsor and she doesn't pick up the phone. So I go outside and I take a walk. And I walk, and my favorite liquor store is in front of me. And, you know, once my sponsor told me, don't keep any drugs in your apartment, I was like, why? I'm not going to use it. But she said, but when you want to use it, it's too close to you. You're going to just do it. Instead of calling your dealer and getting your drugs right. and picking them up. So at this moment, I was already in front of the liquor store and I was already having this breakdown.
What were you? What did you want to say to those people, though? I don't understand.
I just needed someone to talk to.
No particular reason.
No. I just had a bad day, and I wanted to talk to someone.
Okay.
Because basically, you know, like hungry, angry, lonely, yeah. tired. So I was lonely. I was angry. I was tired. Probably hungry, and I just wanted to talk to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And when no one picked up the phone, I was in kind of this thought of like, I knew it was too good to be true. Like, no one actually cares. And it was a stupid thought. And if I would have stayed at home and just let it pass, it would pass. But I didn't. I went outside and this thought, she crossed my mind again. This like stupid thought.
No one cares.
That no one cares. And I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to drink something. And I went inside a liquor store. And I got these 4 small bottles of tequila. And I didn't even leave the liquor store. I drank them all. And then it was like a moment of awareness of what did I just do. And it was on the day of my 4 month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I can't believe I just did that.
I almost feel like you drank them in the liquor store to be like, I better drink these before I think about it.
Before I regret it. Yeah. Before I, like...
come to my senses.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then
Wait, but you told me, I thought you said there was a boy involved in this story.
Mike.
What? We're telling the truth here. What are we doing then?
Well... exactly. I've done things that I wasn't supposed to do, like I would say doing things with people in the rooms. But we kept doing it, and we kept telling everyone that we're just friends, and that's why we hang out all the time. And yeah, and when this person kind of like told me, listen, my sponsor told me that I shouldn't come to your place anymore. And we shouldn't hang out anymore. And I was like, you're one of my best friends in this program. And I didn't realize that he wasn't one of my best friends in the program. He's just a friend that I made more than a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big mistake.
They say that rule. They say don't date in your first year. And you know what? Everyone does anyway. Okay? And the very reason they say not to do it is because of this. Because that 4 months, maybe even though you thought you were ready if something like that happened.
Yeah, maybe I am ready to date someone who is, you know, normal. But I'm not ready for someone who is going to the same meetings as me. That was my friend from the program, from the rooms. And then he stopped going to the meetings because he didn't want to see me or he didn't want to harm my sobriety, which is bullshit, you know? And at this moment, when I relapsed, I wasn't thinking about him. I was thinking about myself. I was thinking about how stupid am I to hook up with someone that everyone told me not to? How stupid am I to do something like that in the rooms? How stupid am I to lie to my sponsor? And it's like lying to your therapist.
Totally.
It's like, and I didn't lie to my therapist when I was using. So why would I lie to my sponsor when I'm sober? It doesn't make any sense. And you know what? I picked up because I was mad and I was disappointed, but not because of the guy, but because of myself. And to tell you the truth, I kind of knew inside of me that it's going to happen. And I was kind of looking for a reason to do it.
So, okay. Now it's been, now you have 90 days, right? Round two.
Round two, 90 days.
Which is amazing.
It feels amazing.
Yeah. And so if you had to say what feels different this time than last time, what is it?
Me. I'm different. You know, I qualified at this meeting when I had 90 days on Friday. So my friend asked me to qualify. And I went there. And before the meeting, one of the friends that I really look up to, she asked me how it feels like. And I was like, it just feels good. It feels different. She said, because you are different.
Yeah, but different how?
Last time when I counted days, on the first day, I was already like, oh, I can't believe I have 89 more days to count. That's a lot. It's too much. It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. This time, I didn't do it. I wasn't looking at the days. I was just living one day at a time, you know? And it sounds like a cliche, and it sounds like, what's she saying? But I was just, instead of waiting for it to come and waiting for it to happen, I was just living my life in the meantime. And instead of, like, complaining on people and places and things and meetings and steps, I was just doing it. It took me much less effort this time. I wasn't doing anything. I was just living my life. And I love doing all of it. I made it my life.
Right. So let me ask you this. And so I'll end it with this question. So let's say, so you just got to the 90 days. It's a big deal. It's really hard to do. I never want to try that again. You know, I never want to have to do that again. So looking back, let's say there was someone listening and they can't get 3 days together, right? And you were going to say, hey, this is the best tip or best piece of advice to get to 90. What is it?
I have this friend. She's very young. She's 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I met her on the end of my first round. And she had, it was really difficult for her to do it. And she just got her 30 days, actually, mm-hmm. for the first time. But she's trying so hard. She's young. And when I came back and I had one day back, she asked me, like, how are you going to do it this time? And, like, you think you're going to be like me? Like me, you know, like me, 3 days
relapser.
And then, yeah, chronic relapser. And I said that I don't think I'm going to be like you because you're you, but if you want to do it with me together one day at a time, and, like, if we relapse, it's okay. Listen, I don't regret my relapse at all. I think that relapse is part of my story, and it's a major part of my story, and it's an important part of my story. And I think that without this relapse, I wouldn't see this program the way I see it now.
Which is as what?
As life changer.
Hmm.
I can't see myself living my life without this program.
My thanks again to Netta M for coming on the show. This has been Keep Coming Back, Real Stories of Sobriety and Recovery. My name again is Mike S., and I'll see you next time.